The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to the Drive Time, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in studio right now is the Deputy Mayor of the Town of Cobourg, John Henderson. John, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
And Rob Washburn, of course, who is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is our weekly co-host here for our weekly installment of Consider This. Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, we're going to let you kick it off with the questions. Obviously, we're talking about what's happening here in Cobourg, but there were a decision that was made at Monday night's council that is an issue for a lot of people. I know there have been a lot of comments made on our Truly Local website about that on the Facebook page, as well as the Cobourg Internet website. So a lot of people are talking about this decision that was made by council. It's not a final decision yet, though, right, John?
No, it's not. All decisions, what happens initially, decisions come to the committee of the whole meeting for discussion purposes. Traditionally, the following Monday is when it's council, and it's at council that we try to reaffirm, make motions. At that time, we can either carry the motion, approve it, send it back for more information, make amendments. So typically it's council that most, I won't say all of them, but most get decided at that time. So right now that would be Monday, I believe December 14th.
So on Monday night, 5-2 vote in favor of giving a series of breaks to the new medical arts building that's being proposed next to the hospital. It's total amounts somewhere around the $300,000 range. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe the total amount is $303 and change. I don't have that number with me, but you're quite right. If you're using the $300,000 figure, you're certainly on the mark.
So what's the rationale then from council's perspective as to why this is a good thing to do?
Well, there are a number of issues. It takes me back in history. I want to admit these are two separate organizations. When I first came to town, I know that we had the same question for support of our hospital, and we did that, or those councils did that at that time. Here we are years later with the issue of the Medical Arts Inc. Incorporated, and the issue has come forward again. And at this time, we believe from what we've heard that unless they get some financial support, this project may not be able to proceed. And where we see or why I see the benefits, certainly for our town, is that we know that I'm being on the Physician Recruitment Retention Committee, that all of Northumberland, including Cobourg, faces a physician shortage. I would estimate it between 8 and 10 doctors in the next 5 to 6 years. So the question is, with this center being aligned with the hospital, with the fact that it would encourage more practices and more visiting rounds at the hospital, it would make everything accessible, certainly to an aging demographic in Cobourg, because we're number two in the province next to Elliott Lake in terms of demographics of age. And to me, what it does, it also makes an opportunity for young doctors coming out to think, when we're all competing to get doctors, of is that an enticement when you can come into a pod or facility that's established and work in a team performance, which appears in the last, I will say, 5 years in working with Tracy West, and how doctors, it appears, are being trained in the province. Very few can come out now and run their own independent practice, as, let's say, was the days of perhaps my family doctor. The other issue that's coming is the expense for them, and they are looking for that kind of team performance. So our thought process, or certainly mine, was if we can afford an opportunity to align with the hospital, knowing that in time it's our understanding that it will be transferred, the ownership of this building will be transferred back to Northumberland Hills Hospital. And it also gives an opportunity for us to meet maybe our demands that we're facing in the next few years. It's something that certainly I felt we needed to support at this time. We understand the short-term implications, but we're hoping in certainly long-term it will serve this community so very well.
What do you mean short-term implications? Can you explain what you
mean
by that?
Well, there are short-term implications. We understand clearly that when they're pulling doctors together in this pod under this building, that means they'll be pulling out of other areas such as up the street from the Northumberland Family Health Unit. So that leaves that space unoccupied, mm-hmm. as it perhaps will leave others. That is a concern that we are aware of,
yep.
from a business point of view. We're also aware that they're needing to find that final funding, and we hope they'll find that so that they can tender and it can go through as the proposal was shown to council. Some people suggest that we're voiding section under the Municipal Act 106, but I can tell you that this council did meet with solicitors to ensure that we were acting within the limits.
What's 106, just so people who don't know?
106, section 106 simply is there any kind of unfair advantage given to any particular group?
Yep.
That unlawfully municipalities cannot do. You cannot set up a situation where one group benefits at the expense mm-hmm. of the other. We did seek solicitor input mm-hmm. on these issues.
Yep.
And based on that, I can only tell you without saying too much more in that because it was confidential that we felt we're acting appropriately as a council in that regard.
So let's go back over this because I think this deserves some careful thought. You mentioned that the town helped the hospital and therefore this operation should be helped. But isn't this it's a business group. I know it's a nonprofit, but it's a business venture. It's not really it is associated with the hospital, but it involves people acting in a business-like manner. Is it really the same sort of things or is it apples and oranges?
No, I think the only thing that's an apple and orange is that right now we do on paper have two distinct groups. We have the Northumberland Hills Hospital who leased the land.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't able under Lynn responsibilities and mandates to go beyond leasing the land. We have a group that's willing to come in and try and create a situation for physicians and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
The difference for me are twofold.
Yep.
One, it's classified and has been classified as a not-for-profit corporation.
But people make money in a not-for-profit. I mean, in the sense that they're not trying to be profitable, but people get paid and there's disbursements. And, I mean, money's being passed around. It's not like it's a volunteer thing, right?
That's correct. Yeah. You're absolutely right. These are paid professionals. But it's also my understanding that the intent of this agreement that is established with the hospitals to return this building under the full direction of the hospital. So for me, that's a very critical, important part
mm-hmm.
So I necessarily don't see it, perhaps as someone else may, as an apple, to your point, an apple and an orange.
Mm-hmm.
I see it a little bit more related.
But well, I want to, for a second, I got one more thing. One more thing, please, Dave. There's 166,000 square feet of available commercial and retail space in this town. I went to the economic development website, pulled down the November 18th stats for available space. I did the math and added up. And approximately 166,000 square feet of open space. Why are we creating more? Why aren't we just using up the space that we've got and let the doctors be there? I mean, we've got an entire building almost down across from the CCI. There's, there's stuff on King Street. There's plenty of stuff on Division Street. We've got a mall that's sitting across there that's got a couple thousands and thousands of square feet open that could be renovated into offices for doctors. Why do we need to have a new space like this? And at the same time, if it's going to be a business venture, why are you subsidizing that space?
Well, first of all, I would encourage, I guess the comment, I would encourage to speak to a member of the board, because I know right now the Northumberland Family Health Team is in their arrangement, you're quite right, in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my understanding that that situation was not able to work, and I can't explain to you why I'm not privileged to that information by the board. But my understanding is that they weren't able to move all the services financially within the arrangement of Northumberland Mall. A lot of the other area I know that you're mentioning, we have quite a bit of square footage available, but if you go through the town website, and I've done the same thing, unfortunately, a lot of it belongs in the Northern Industrial Park, a whack of it. And if you look at those buildings, which are, in my opinion, meant for manufacturing-type style buildings, in my opinion, personally, I don't think they're conducive to future medical art sites.
Sure, but there is commercials. There is commercial professional space available in that list as well. I didn't write every address down, but there is available. Anyway, I'm sorry, Dave. I cut you off.
No, not a problem.
Thank you very much.
One of the points that you raised was the fact that this would be built, and then ultimately it would fall back under the fold of Northumberland Hills Hospital. That's something you see as very positive. But what we've seen over the last decade or so is cuts to the lens, cuts to any type of bricks and mortar development to any hospital. So I think and this is my opinion, of course, that the long-term prospects of the hospital themselves actually taking over this lease and running this facility themselves are probably pretty much pie in the sky, given the way we've seen funding for hospitals and healthcare facilities in this province over the last decade or so. Like it would be nice if down the road it became part of the hospital, I'm sure. But I don't honestly believe that that's something that would be a reality. So what I see is that we're giving waivers to the MMAI, which is a not-for-profit organization, and that's wonderful, to take people out of existing offices, to move them into this one facility so it would be just sort of a one-shop-stopping healthcare facility. And that sounds nice, too. It all sounds great, except now all of those spaces are going to be vacant, which means we've now got to find people to fill those positions. And if the goal of a new doctor who's coming here is to be in the new facility, then obviously they're not going to be looking at those spaces first and foremost. They're going to want to be in the new spot. And so now we're losing revenue from those spots that are already available. So there's lost revenue there. And as you said, you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about that as something that we look at. We know that the town is struggling right now with the tax base as it is being primarily residential. This waiver is ultimately going to be falling to the shoulders of those residential ratepayers, though, isn't it?
Well, that's something we're certainly going to have to look at. There's different ways but you're right. No matter which way we look at it, I don't disagree. It still relates to a tax base in some way because we are using taxpayers' money. So I don't want to pretend that we're not using taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
We are.
If we're willing to give these guys a waiver, why wouldn't we, as pointed out by the Coburg Taxpayers Association, give Habitat for Humanity, for instance, a 100% waiver? We've given them 50% waivers in the past for development, in terms of development fees. They are a not-for-profit, actual registered charity. Right. Why wouldn't we give them 100% of a waiver then? And for this corporation, this independent business, if we're going to give them a waiver of any amount, maybe go with the 50% on that.
And that's something that was suggested. Okay. I'm not hiding that. I believe it was Councillor Realm who suggested to keep with what we've been doing. And that's a decision that was put on the table, and it was part of the discussion in the past Monday night's council for reflection.
Mm-hmm.
I guess where I had to weigh carefully is I have a sense of what kind of support they require to try to make this project go forward. And even with our support, it still may not. So it's something we each had to weigh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not treating in light of certainly Habitat for Humanity, who we've always supported. I guess I'm like you. I want to maintain our hospital in its fullest condition possible. I think it serves serves our whole entire community, as far as I'm concerned, in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So each of us had to make a heartfelt decision, and it was heartfelt. It was a tough decision. I'm not going to say it was an easy decision. And at this point, I'm listening as events come in. I'm sure when I get home tonight, I'll read a number of emails that are being sent to me. That's happened throughout the day. And I will read those. I'll look at those. And I will certainly reflect on what's being asked.
Is it correct to assume, though, that if they don't get this waiver, then this is a dead project for these people? Because, again, that goes to the business model.
It does, but it's very tough because
The only reason I say it goes to a business model is because there's a number of businesses in the downtown. We see them coming and going. They struggle sometimes. Sometimes they get by. They do really well. But we don't see any kind of waivers happening for those people. We don't see.
And again,
we're talking about a medical arts facility, which has a different cachet, I suppose, than a coffee bar or a restaurant.
I'd have to disagree with you to a part because there are times that we do everything possible to encourage businesses to come.
Mm-hmm.
We've had certain industries that come to us for support of, can you help us? Like, we'd like to expand a line. We'd like to remain in Cobourg.
Mm-hmm.
What's it you can do for? So we work within the elements that we can. We make that work for them so they can stay in Cobourg.
And I've got to be fair. I mean, as a former business owner, I've taken advantage of some of those things, which would be low-interest loans and things like
right.
that.
So
why wouldn't we just float these guys a low-interest loan then?
Well, that was something we also checked out through our solicitor, through Section 106. And
mm-hmm.
we have to be careful that in a bottom line, we don't become a guarantor in any fashion
mm-hmm.
way. Because if we're seen as a guarantor, that would void Section 106.
Sure. And just so folks know, the layman version of Section 106 is you can't give unfair advantage for one business over another. And it's the same reason why when we see companies leave to go to the United States, for instance, where the community can say, well, we'll give you free hydro for a year and a half. We can't do that in this province. We can't do that in Ontario.
Correct.
That's really what you're alluding to.
And that's why you'll note that a lot of businesses recently across the border are going to Ohio, Michigan
mm-hmm.
in droves. Simply because they can offer
there's a deeper issue here, though. I mean, we're talking. I know during the election campaign, this was mentioned about a year ago, so ago that there was something like a million to $2 million of vacant property tax revenue that we're not taking in because there's these historic vacant properties that are out there that are not getting filled. So, I mean, the bottom line, in one sense, is, are we creating more of this, and will it have a negative impact on tax revenues coming into the town as well by opening this stuff up?
I'm gonna get you to answer that in a second, but we do have a caller online. I'd like to get to that caller, and we're going to take that call. Go ahead. You're on air.
It just seems like I don't think a normal person could get a loan looking at the way this thing is. Well, we hope down the road the hospital takes over. We think that maybe doctors might come to the area. This might be, there's so much of pie in the sky hopes. How is this a business plan that, you're talking $300,000. That's a lot of money. How can you go on what they're saying as well? This might be this. It doesn't sound like there's been a lot of preparation on this.
Well, I'll give you the facts I'm aware of. and I can't give you the facts, obviously I'm not aware of, but at this point, the members of the board who are putting this together have put up certain funding, my understanding is, to $3.5 million of their own money, in which promissory notes to start the process. They have a 93% signed an intent. It can't be finalized till the building's built, but they have a 93% vacancy rate intent to move into that particular
occupancy,
building.
Occupancy, you mean?
Yes.
Occupancy, okay.
On top of that, they have the support, obviously, from Northumberland Hills Hospital, and the fact that they were willing to lease the land at, I don't know if in fact it cost only a dollar or whatever the deal was, but to be a partner in this. Also, long-term, the deal was when this is built and functioning to return the funds and the building under the direction to the hospital.
So there's, there's a payback, is what you're saying then.
Yes.
They're going to pay back this $300,000.
To the town?
No, they're not paying. This would be our, I want to be clear here. If we
chose this,
this would be an in-kind contribution to enable this to move forward. So, but in terms of their business plan, I believe they have done everything possible. At this point, council did see the money that's been spent with the architect, which I believe is Mr. Lett Architects, of towards the building, the mortar, the plans, the designs. So that money has been put up front and paid for. So there's, I look at this as serious intent. I don't look at it as pie in the sky. I know what the horizon holds for Northumberland County and Cobourg for the future under physician recruitment, where we were definitely going to have gaps in requiring physicians, certainly for Cobourg and the region. So when I put that together for a group to put that kind of money up to make the steps they have, I call that serious intent. It may not fulfill everything at this point, but I don't consider those steps, at least at this point, personally, pie in the sky.
Well, just look at it. If $300,000 on however million-dollar building is going to be a stumbling block, that doesn't seem too good to me. Like, how did the people of Cobourg, they're being asked to support this building? I don't understand. You know, we look at the way the healthcare is. I mean, geez, they keep cutting back the hospital. We got to pay for all these machines and everything else. We don't even know that you're going to have a hospital 10 years from now.
You could be absolutely right. I don't have the crystal ball from 10 years today, and you are quite right on your other point, is that I have never known the province at any time to support capital equipment for any hospital in Ontario, including NH Northumberland Hills Hospital. And that's why each cycle, perhaps every, I would say certainly term of council, that's why Northumberland Hills Hospital has run a separate campaign to raise significant money for capital equipment. And you might ask me, well, shouldn't the province be doing that? Well, I would concur with you that they should be better team partners. Has that ever happened to my knowledge? It's never happened. So you're quite right. I don't expect that to happen. And there are pressures on healthcare, and I concur with you. They're going to continue to increase. I know right now Cobourg has the second oldest demographics in Ontario. The only one who beats us is Elliott Lake. Well, that makes us number two. That brings some positives to our community, but also brings concerns and a new attitude of how do we deal with that in future. So you're quite right. I don't know if the hospital is going to be here in 10 years or not, but I know I'd rather fight to keep our hospital here and our doctors here, because I'll use myself as example. In 10 years from now, I'm going to be a little bit older than I am now, and I'm certainly going to maybe need a certain degree of care and certainly services, and I'd certainly like to have them in my own backyard if at all possible, than have to perhaps head off to Region of Durham or Peterborough, I'm assuming Peterborough being a larger hospital, I sense it will remain. But you're quite right. I don't have that crystal ball. I don't know who does. But I believe we do have to make an effort to support something we started. I've forgotten how old the hospital is, but I think it's, what, Dave, 20, 25 years now?
The hospital? 10 years.
10.
10? Oh, sorry.
A little more than 10, maybe.
More than 10. So at least we've had it for 10 years, and my hope is we'd have it for 10 years or more.
Well, we all have that hope. You know, that'd be nice. I get a little nervous when you look at a long-range plan that's $300,000, and they're saying, well, you know, if we don't get this money, we're not going to go ahead with it. We can't afford it.
It's not so much that. I know the struggle for them, like anything, is to find a guarantor. That is their stumbling block. I hope and trust they can resolve that.
Would that not then mean that this is not a good a good place to put money? You know, like if they can't get funding or bank loans or whatever.
Obviously, and the truth of the matter comes down to that, and that can't happen. Then I believe they'll have to make a proper decision that they can't proceed.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Appreciate your call. Thanks. Okay. Thanks again for the call, Ed. Well, you are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. We're going to take our first break of the hour. We will be right back. Our guest is John Henderson, the deputy mayor of the town of Cobourg, and Rob Washburn for this weekly installment of Consider This Live. Stick around. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. My guests in the studio are John Henderson, the deputy mayor of the town of Cobourg, and Rob Washburn, who is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. We've been talking about the proposal for the new medical arts facility and the waiving of town fees. That's not the only thing that you guys have been talking about of late either, though. There's a story out the other day, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask this question on behalf of Pete Fisher. What's up with the overtime at the Cobourg Police Service? You know anything on that, John?
I don't. The only thing I can tell you... there is a board, a police services board, that deals with policies, and it's up then to the chief and deputy chief with their platoons to deal with operational issues. I can tell you, being a former chair of the Cobourg Police Services Board, if it comes to the issue of operations and overtime, that preview 100% is under the direction of the chief or deputy chief based on needs of service, and it's a judgment call they make. Where we'll see that, of course, is when they present, they do share their budgets with us.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to make clear, so people have a clear understanding, when budgets are shared from any Cobourg Police Services, we're allowed to ask questions of clarification or points of interest, but we're not entitled under the Police Services Act, as we would do in a municipal budget, to go line by line.
Mm-hmm.
That's not permissible once the budget's approved by the Cobourg Police Services Board. So it really does become a chief's call.
Is there any influence to the Police Services Board from outside civilians who aren't on the board? I mean, if the budget is being deliberated, for instance, by the Police Services Board, is there a room for public input on that budget?
You can perhaps write certainly to the chair, to members of the board, and ask for points of consideration.
Mm-hmm.
As a board, like any board, they can take that under consideration. But whatever they deem to be appropriate in the best interest of service on behalf of the community really does become the bottom line.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
That's 25 years as a journalist, and I'll tell you right now, I've never seen the Police Service Board go to a public consultation on their budget.
I don't think I've ever heard of it ever in any city or municipality, for that matter.
Even the overtime, it'll be worked into the overall budget. So the only time we'll know if there was any real impact, whether was or not, will be when they come out with their actual figures, which will be part of their budget presentation for the new year. So that's when it'll all wash out in the laundry. I mean, they may make cuts or they may do other things mm-hmm. to make the books balance. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I'll tell you one thing I'm interested in. This is something you would know about, and that's the new governance model that got brought to before council in the last few weeks. There's a lovely paragraph that starts it off where it talks about improving transparency and communication. And I'm wondering how these changes do that, because when I look pretty closely, there isn't any radical difference between what exists now and what you're proposing that would make one sort of jump up and down and say, wow, look at how transparent it is or how much the communication is going to improve.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to respectfully disagree. To a certain point.
Sure.
And that is, I believe we're making incremental changes, but positive changes. And if you want to highlight that come to mind, part of our strategic plan, which to me aligns very closely to our governance model, we're moving ahead in budget to do Cogeco or whoever it may be, but to broadcast all our meetings. That's both Committee of the Whole, mm-hmm. Council, mm-hmm. and open public meetings.
And they're going to be available online, are they?
That's the goal.
Okay.
And that's not happened before.
Mm-hmm.
We've also engaged communications officer, Ms. Purdy, who's working actually on a public engagement policy,
mm-hmm.
What that may look like and all its elements and how does it fit in to help us both in governance and communication and as we go forward with all the various meetings that we run.
When you talk about public engagement, what are you talking about there? I mean, that's a pretty broad term. What are you talking about specifically when you talk about public engagement policy? What kinds of things so that people would understand?
Well, it's everything. It's everything from inclusive of websites to social media to how do we interact to how do we run meetings to how do we respond, timelines, okay. how do we do it internally, okay. externally.
Okay.
So it you're right. It's quite broad, but it's also quite mm-hmm. in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
On that same avenue, we've started as well a process. Council supported through a motion the hiring of eSolutions, and they're starting the complete revamping of our website and to have it integrated through all town departments. To me, that's simply exciting that we can finally have an integrated format moving forward, not just for staff, but council and use of the public.
So what does that mean in terms of how it would affect an everyday person? If I was going to go to this new website, how would it be different and helpful to me to work?
Our past website, I'll be polite here, was slightly outdated, a bit of a dinosaur. And it was based on form.
Mm-hmm.
And people today don't do very well with form. They're more, in my opinion, into function.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to go and say, well, what do I want to do and where do I want to play and where do I want to work and tell me everything under that umbrella and how do I find it with a push of a button, hopefully no more than 3 clicks, to find the information mm-hmm. that I want in every aspect, sure. including – any related policies to council, agendas, bylaws. For example, I'll give you a prime example. We have a hockey tournament coming up here that we're very proud mm-hmm. of at the CCC next week, and it's a first for Cobourg and it's a first for an Ontario. But I had great difficulty, going to get my tickets, buying them online, pressing a button, have my payment, and I'm done. I only got my tickets, but it was quite an ordeal. I encourage others out there, if you haven't got your tickets, please do so. But the point I'm trying to make is that imagine if we could be at the point you could do this in your home where you could do it as we're sitting here tonight
okay.
and have that capacity.
But part of the governance thing was going to council during the election. People ran on a platform of transforming the system by which governance took place. And that we were going to move out of a system whereby we had coordinators who looked after particular areas.
Uh-huh.
They were going to be responsible for certain things. And there was talk that that was going to be loosened up. There'd be more uh-huh. holistic approach. That people were not going to be so dovetailed into particular areas of responsibility. Uh-huh. And information was going to flow more. And then all councillors would get to comment about all things. There was that feel during the campaign that uh-huh. that was going to happen. We're a year later.
Uh-huh.
I looked at your report.
Uh-huh.
And I see that, it's nice that you guys are going to have agendas for these meetings, but those are going to be held in confidence, which I believe means not public, that, okay, if I'm a counselor.
Sorry, what agenda?
Sorry, there was coordinator staff meetings. There were going to be agendas, but they would be held in confidence, that they wouldn't be.
Well, I like to distinguish between the two, because if we have anything to do with agendas with the Committee of the Whole and anything to do with council or any support material that may be on those agendas,
mm-hmm.
that is certainly all public information and should be out there.
All right.
If we have,
I think, though, just if I could interrupt you, John, I think what you're referring to are the agendas for the independent department meetings is what you're talking about.
That's right.
Yes, we do not. I don't know any municipality yet. If you can find one for me, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have what we call working sessions, working notes we keep for ourselves to help as we work through an element, but no working notes are released, to my knowledge, because they're working notes, because what we start with and where we end up with before we can get into the drafts could be totally, completely, utterly different. And so no municipal council I'm aware of releases their working notes at this time.
I think, though, the point that Rob's making, though, is that there was a lot of talk about, you know, breaking down the silos and allowing for more access to information from the general public in terms of how these departments are being run. Because the argument has always been put forth, the perception is that staff was running the town, and that the town, because there was the separate entities, these silos, was that each councillor had no idea from the next what was really happening within those departments. And quite frankly, that was good for the staff because no one was able to ask questions beyond the coordinator. So really, with the new changes to the governance model, what has changed in regards to that?
Well, I use an example today. We met in a governance meeting, though it's ad hoc. But today, I mean, Councillor McCarthy is there with me through all the discussion with staff.
Mm-hmm.
When we finish and get a template that we think's ready, we then share that language and everything we've done with every other councillor. So then when we get to the next stage and create the draft, then that draft then comes to the Committee of the Whole
mm-hmm.
for full discussion.
So those other councillors at that time have an opportunity for input then and into how that governance is going forward?
Yes, we share that we do share that information. We have mm-hmm. I have to be careful in my role as I share it. I hate to say this, but I share it in groups of one up to three.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it ever in numbers of four, because under the Municipal Act,
considered a quorum.
That's considered a quorum, and therefore I didn't give due notice of a meeting, and that mm-hmm. would void the Municipal Act. So we work in terms of one to three, make sure they see the information. We're working very diligently, this council, to make sure they have their information at least, hopefully, 10, if not more, days in advance. So when they get to council, we have now a draft before them.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much have everything I have. And I feel it's working extremely well doing this. The part I'm pleased that we're tightening up on is that we're encouraging staff, and staff has agreed to do this under the CAO, is to create templates that become consistent between departments. And that's an area that we think will really assist us as well as we move forward.
And that's something new.
Yes, that's very new.
Okay.
Do we really need the coordinator for each department, or could it not just be, I know it's been proposed before, where everybody has access to everything and we discuss everything and anybody can bring certain things forward? What's the advantage of the coordinator system that makes it want to be held on to rather than transformed?
Okay. We're making, and I agree, we're making incremental steps. But to me, one of the powerful things that Coburg's had that, I'll use myself as an example. I've always appreciated it. Coburg has a wealth of experience through citizens. And in our advisory committees, granted, we have many,
mm-hmm.
Probably more than most municipalities. But tonight, for example, I was at the Heritage Advisory Committee to sit in. They did a phenomenal job and dealt with heartfelt issues. And out of that, they made motions and recommendations for council's consideration. If we went to a new system such as what I might call standing committee or standing or committee of the whole only, under the Act, Heritage Committee is statutory, so they would remain. However, the planning committee, and we have a planning advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
I sat on that my first term for 4 years, and I can tell you it was a very valuable committee based on citizen input.
Mm-hmm.
If you track other communities who've moved to these full standing committee, those kind of committees no longer exist in their municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. And so when you track different municipalities, I'm not saying they don't have advisories, but I would say they're at least one third of the number. The other part I'd like to add in, if we have issues right now, and I know budget's the other hot topic, but at least I can have up to three councillors at every meeting gaining input. And then when we're through, even though they may not be right at that table,
mm-hmm.
I go back and I share those concerns, as long as I don't, again, go beyond three. I share those concerns with my other councillors. So in my opinion, are they as informed as they possibly can be at the moment? In real life time, my answer is yes.
Okay, well, on that note, John, we're going to take our next quick pause here as we pay some more bills. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest, John, almost said John Ford, actually. It's Councillor Mayor, Deputy Mayor John Henderson and Rob Washburn, of course, in the studio. Rob, you had a question.
Yeah, I did. We were talking just before the break about the committee system and how pleased you are with how it works, and you're saying how valuable these committees are. And yet, in the governance report, it appears that you're getting rid of the Waterfront Advisory Committee. You're going to be adding a Culture and Arts Committee. You're getting rid of the Seniors Advisory Committee and the Environmental Committee. And then you're rejigging a whole bunch of other things as well. How is this match with what you were saying before? Because if these committees are so important and it's such good input that you were talking about, wouldn't you want to keep all these around?
Well, you would think so, but let me measure. What we measure, we want to see how effective these committees are working and are they fulfilling their terms of reference. So let me go back to the Waterfront. Waterfront was a critical committee. It was put in to deal on a project basis. But when we as a council put a motion forward to stop, in particular, all the waterfront expansion until the next term of council in 2018, that kind of ended a lot of the projects on the terms of reference for the Waterfront Committee. Being on that committee and appointed to that committee by council, along with Councillor Rickerby, we found a lot of issues were being redundant and repeated to the parks and recreation terms of reference that were already in place.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that, our new recommendation going forward is, yes, we're recommending that the Waterfront Committee end,
mm-hmm.
but all the terms of references be rewritten for the Parks and Rec by that committee,
mm-hmm.
including all future waterfront issues. And in the transition, because we don't want to lose any viable members and good points were made by the public last Monday night, we're going to recommend that all members remain, if they so wish, will be joining that committee. So you'll have both appointed members, for a better word, as well as stakeholder interests, have a particular interest, will have the right to sit on that committee. In terms of the seniors, we went to the seniors, and they indicated that they did not see themselves as fulfilling their own mandate. They indicated they would like to make a turn in direction and work towards more of an age-friendly concept mm-hmm. that the province is promoting. They saw that as more valuable, and they indicated to us they already have access to us if they have issues. So that's why we recommend the seniors be dissolved. In terms of the Environmental Committee, we looked at it, but the Environmental Committee had a terms of reference, but did not have what we call a high-end, in my opinion. Not that their discussions weren't important, but climate action issues, a carbon footprint measure targets, what's coming down from the province. These were the discussions were not happening perhaps to the same degree we were hoping. We felt perhaps best to split the committee in two.
Mm-hmm.
To allow those then to join planning under sustainability, because a lot of issues fall under planning, but sustainability was, I'm not saying it wasn't considered, but We should have that input with the planning members. Mm-hmm. Going the other way, we have a group who's interested in water, carbon footprint, trail systems, climate change, emissions. And we felt that would best fit going towards perhaps the area of public works. The problem, however, we've never had any kind of group that I'm aware of that dealt with public works issues. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, we're still not able to come up with an appropriate name. So the recommendation when this group gets together, we're going to ask for them to create a name that they feel works for them.
Mm-hmm.
We're very respectful of the citizen report presented by two citizens on Monday night. And we are looking in the future, how can we move up on the schedule the work towards that was presented by the citizens on sustainability,
mm-hmm.
and what efforts can we make in that regard? And I must say, in Coburg's planning, we are working towards what's called an integrated community sustainability plan,
mm-hmm.
Which many municipalities are working towards. So we agreed that for this December 14th, we will move that up on our agenda, if so accepted by council.
Well, I want to thank you for that, John. I want to thank you for being here as well. John Henderson, the deputy mayor of the town of Coburg, thanks for sitting in the hot seat for you. We try to be as disgustingly reasonable as possible, but sometimes you just can't be. Rob, welcome back to the show. We will see you again next week.
Look forward to it.
Any indicator as to who our guest is next week?
Yes, we have the Salvation Army Major Michael Simpson is going to be here talking about the Kettle Campaign. Looking forward to it a lot.
Awesome. So are we. Thanks for tuning in, listeners. You've been listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Truly Local Radio. This is Holistic Political Chat.
Thank you so much. We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more.